are, Caroline. There's no one down here. I try not to look like I'm rattled, but I am. And I can't imagine how anything in a freaky basement underneath the school theater could possibly change my life. My mind's operating on overload now, my thoughts racing, and I feel a panic attack coming on. What was I thinking? I don't even know her. I turn away and start heading back the way I came. Sam, she says, and I stop, just like that. Caroline grips my forearm and looks right into my eyes. Please, check it out. There's something about the look on her face that makes me want to trust her, like I've known her all my life. And as nervous as I am, I'm even more curious to see what's on the other side of that door. Fine, I say, clenching my teeth. I reach for the knob and turn. The room on the other side is small and painted completely black. Black ceiling, black floor, metal shelving units stocked with cleaning supplies line three of the walls, and the other one is covered with hanging mops and brooms. Caroline points to a section of mop heads gently swaying back and forth against the wall, as if they'd recently been touched. I pull them to one side, exposing a seam that runs all the way up the wall until it meets another one at the top. It's a door. The hinges are painted black and so is the deadbolt, camouflaging everything perfectly. Knock, Caroline commands from behind me. I do what I'm told without questioning or arguing or second-guessing. First, there's a click, and then the door swings toward me, and I see a pair of eyes in the narrow opening. Who are you? A girl's voice whispers. I glance over at Caroline, but she just gives me this say-something look, so I return to the girl in the doorway. I'm Samantha. I hold my hand up. I mean, Sam. Why not, I figure, as long as I'm making introductions and all. I was hoping I could come in. She looks past me over my shoulder, and Caroline whispers, "She's with me." The girl makes a face but pushes the door open anyway, giving us enough room to step inside. Then she scans the janitor's closet, like she's checking to be sure the two of us are alone, and I hear the deadbolt snap closed again. I don't even have time to take in the surroundings, because now there's a guy standing in front of me. He's tall and thin, with broad shoulders and a head full of sandy, blonde hair. He looks a little bit familiar, and I'm still trying to place him when he narrows his eyes at me and says, "What are you doing here?" I look at Caroline for help again, but she runs her finger across her lips like she's zipping them shut, and I kind of want to punch her right now. "I'm Sam," I begin, but he cuts me off.
"I know who you are, Samantha."
I study his face again. He knows my name. I don't know his. "I'm sorry." I'm not really sure why I'm apologizing, but it seems like the right thing to do. I step backward toward the door, feeling for a knob, but there isn't one. The girl who let me in hands him a thick braided cord and he slips it over his head. A gold key bounces against his chest.
"How did you find this room?"
"My friend," I say, gesturing toward Caroline. He glances over at her and she nods at him. He quickly returns his attention to me.
"Your friend what?"
Caroline's made it pretty clear that she isn't going to do anything to help me at this point, but that doesn't mean her words can't get me the rest of the way into the room. "I heard that this place might change my life, and well, I guess my life could use some serious changing, so I thought." I trail off, watching him, waiting for his face to relax, but it doesn't. He stares at me for what feels like a full minute. I stare back, refusing to give in. Caroline must be getting worried, because she wraps both hands around my arm and pulls herself in closer, showing him she's on my side. He crosses his arms and never takes his eyes off me.
"Fine," he says. "You can stay today, this one time, but that's it. After this, you have to forget all about this place, got it? One time, Samantha."
"Got it," I say. Then I add, "And it's Sam." His forehead creases.
"Fine, but it's not like this makes us friends or anything."
"Friends? My friends don't call me Sam." "Why would I think we're friends? I don't even know you."
He smiles, revealing a dimple on the left side of his mouth.
No, he says, as if it's funny. Of course you don't know me.
He walks away, shaking his head, leaving Caroline and me standing alone at the back of the room. What the hell was that? I ask her. My voice is even more wobbly than it was a few minutes ago. She gives me a supportive nudge with her elbow. Don't worry about it, you did great. Now that he's no longer blocking my view, I can see where I am. The room is long and narrow, and like the janitor's closet, painted entirely in black. But the ceilings are twice as high, and even though it's dark, it's not claustrophobic at all. At the front of the room, I see a low riser that appears to be a makeshift stage. Smack in the center, there's a wooden stool. I count five other people in the room. They're sitting on small couches and oversized chairs facing the stage and set at a slight angle, each one covered in different material. Blue crushed velvet, brown leather, red and gray checks, and completely unique. Low bookcases line the room, and small mismatched lamps are spaced evenly around the perimeter. I nervously wonder what would happen if the power went out. Then I see the walls. I spin a slow 360 in place, taking it all in. All four walls are covered with scraps of paper in different colors and shapes and textures, all jutting out at various angles. Lined paper ripped from spiral-bound notebooks, plain paper three-hole punched, graph paper torn at the edges, pages that have yellowed with age, along with napkins and post-its and brown paper lunch bags, and even a few candy wrappers. Caroline's watching me, and I take a few cautious steps closer to get a better look. I reach for one of the pages, running the corner between my thumb and forefinger, and that's when I notice handwriting on each one, as distinctive as the paper itself. Loopy, flowing cursive, tight, angular letters, precise, blocky printing. Wow. I don't think I've ever experienced this sensation outside the pool, but I feel it now, deep in my bones. My shoulders drop. My heart's no longer racing. I can't see a toxic, negative thought for miles. What is this place? I whisper to Caroline, but before she can say anything, the girl I met at the door comes out of nowhere and grabs my arm. She has dark hair and a pixie cut, and now she's bouncing in place, like this is the most exciting thing that's happened to her in a long time. Come sit with me. There's an open spot on the couch in front. She starts leading me toward this atrocious green and pink plaid sofa in the first row. How long have you been writing? For what feels like the 100th time today, my head spins toward Caroline. She's got a weird grin on her face. Writing? Don't worry, Pixie Cut says. She tightens her grip on my arm and pulls me closer. I'm the newest one here, and I totally remember my first time. Don't be afraid. You're only here to listen. She plops down on one end of the couch and pats the cushion on her right. Sit. I do as I'm told. Well, you definitely picked a good day, she says. Sydney's going first and AJ's up after her. Caroline settles in on my other side. I look to her for clues, and again she gives me nothing. Everyone gets quiet as a heavy-set girl, I assume to be Sydney, climbs up to the stage and bumps the stool with her hip, scooting it to the side. Wait, I know her. She's in my U.S. history class. I'd never seen her before this week, but on the first day of school she strolled into class wearing a black strappy dress with bright red cherries all over it. It looked vintage, but it wasn't her outfit or her confidence that caught my attention. It was her hair. Long, thick, and bright red like Cassidy's. I'd already been thinking about her all day, wishing the two of us were at the pool instead, and seeing that hair made me miss her even more. Sydney holds up the top of a chicken McNuggets container. I wrote this last night at... She flips the paper around to show us the McDonald's arches and bounces her hand up and down, nodding proudly. The lid wasn't as greasy this time, so I got an entire poem in, she says, and everyone laughs at what I presume to be an inside joke. I call this one Nuget. She turns the paper around again and runs her fingertip across the word Nuggets and then clears her throat dramatically. Entry.
My teeth pierce your bumpy flesh, oil sweet slipping over my tongue, sliding down my throat. Decisions. Barbecue or sweet and sour, mustard or honey. I close my eyes, let fate decide. Tip, dip, lift. Barbecue. Study. Golden, shining under fluorescence, piled, grazing each other's edges. Patient, always patient. Admiration. Gold, pink, crispy, salty. What the hell are you made of? Everyone stands clapping and cheering, and Sydney holds her skirt to one side and curtsies. Then she throws her arms up in the air and her head back and yells, "Yes, stick me!" Some guy on the other couch tosses a glue stick at her. She catches it in the air, removes the cap, and, using the stool as a table, runs the glue back and forth across the McDonald's logo. She steps off the stage, and I think she's walking toward me, but she passes our couch and stops at the wall. We all watch as she smacks what's left of the Chicken McNuggets lid against it. Brushing her hands together, she settles into a spot on the couch behind me, and our eyes meet. She smiles at me. I smile back. I don't think I've ever heard her speak until now. When I turn around again, the guy who let me inside is taking the stage. He perches himself on the stool and picks up the acoustic guitar that's strapped over his shoulder. How do I know him? I follow the string around his neck and picture that gold key hiding behind his guitar.
I wrote this last weekend in my room. And okay, I'm saying it.
He pauses for dramatic effect.
This one sucks.
He stands up, holds his hands in front of him, and lets the guitar fall slack so the strap catches it. He's gesturing toward himself in this go-ahead-and-let-me-have-it kind of way, and everyone around me starts ripping papers out of notebooks, balling them up and chucking them at him. He laughs and keeps gesturing with his hands, silently telling them to keep it coming. I look over at Caroline. She won't make eye contact with me, so I lightly elbow Pixie Cut Girl. Why are they doing that? I ask, and she comes in close to my ear. It's one of the rules. You can't criticize anyone's poetry, but especially not your own. He perches himself on the stool and picks up his guitar again, and the second he does, the paper stops flying. He starts plucking the strings, and this melody fills the room. He's only playing a few notes, but they sound so pretty together this way, over and over again. And then he starts singing.
So long, lazy ray. Were you a crack you'd be tempting to look through? Were you my coat on a cold day, you'd lose track of the ways you were worn. And it's true, I haven't got a clue how to love you.
He's not looking at any of us. He's just staring down at the guitar, picking up the strings. He sings two more verses, and his voice rises higher, louder when he reaches the chorus. After another verse, the tempo slows, and I can tell the song is winding down.
Like sunlight dancing on my skin, you'll still be in my mind. So I'm only gonna say, so long, lazy ray.
The last note lingers in the silence. Everyone remained quiet for a second or two, but now they're on their feet, clapping and cheering, and tossing more paper balls at his head as he swats them away. Then they start pelting him with glue sticks. He manages to catch one as it bounces off the wall behind him, and then he does that musician thing, slipping his guitar around his back in one fluid motion. He's shaking his head as if he's embarrassed by the attention, and pulls a piece of paper out of the back pocket of his jeans. He unfolds it, flattens it against the stool, and rubs glue along the back before he steps down from the stage. He walks to the other side of the room, and still clutching the paper, bows once. Then he reaches up high on the wall, smacking his words against it. I'm trying to figure out if everyone else is as taken aback as I am, but they don't seem to be. Didn't anyone else think that was amazing? Because while all of them are clearly enjoying this moment, none of them look quite as surprised as I am, and I'm pretty sure their arms aren't covered in goosebumps like mine are. They all look relatively unfazed. Except Caroline. She's grinning ear to ear, And as we take our seats again, she threads her arm through mine and rests her chin on my shoulder. I knew it, she says. I was right about you. As I scan the room, taking in the slips of paper scattered around me, I think I catch Caroline and Pixie Cut Girl look at each other. What is this place? I ask again, hearing the amazement in my own voice. Pixie Cut answers me. We call it Poet's Corner. An overwhelming urge. The next day, I see them in the places they must have been all along. When I walk into U.S. history, Sydney spots me right away, and the two of us exchange knowing glances. Later that day, as I'm headed to lunch, I pass Pixie Cut and overhear her friend call her Abigail. I recognize a girl in the student parking lot and another in the library. Each time I make eye contact with any of them, I get a hint of a smile, like we're still separated by an invisible barrier, but now we have something in common, a secret. By the end of the day, I've seen all but one. I'm heading to my car when I look up and finally see AJ heading straight for me, and I feel the corners of my mouth twitching into a nervous grin. I'm expecting the same reaction I got from the others, a sly wave, a chin tilt, but instead he passes right by me, his eyes fixed on the ground in front of him. When I'm a safe distance away, I stop and turn around, watching until he disappears from sight. I'm trying to decide what to do when Alexis appears out of nowhere, her high heels tapping on the cement and her thumbs tapping on her cell phone. There you are. She stuffs her phone in the back pocket of her jeans. I was hoping to catch you. I just got the best news. She pulls me close. There was a cancellation at the spa. My mom was able to book another appointment. I look at her sideways. Don't you get it? The words squeak out and she does a little dance in place, shaking my arm around as she bounces and beams and watches me, like she's expecting me to join in. You can come. What about Haley? She purses her lips and looks around, checking to be sure we're alone. No. She draws the single word out like it's a musical note. Not Haley. You. She pokes my collarbone. And now I know precisely where I reside on her social ladder, second rung from the bottom. Haley occupies the last one, and as soon as she learns I'm invited to Alexis's birthday and she's not, she'll know it too. You have no idea how sad I've been, Samantha. I felt horrible not asking you. Even though our moms weren't friends in preschool, you and I were best friends in kindergarten. I take note of her word choice. I'm not her best friend now, but I was in kindergarten. I'm glad you're coming. Oh, and plan to spend the night, too. Is Haley spending the night? I ask. The spa might not be able to accommodate all five of us, but Alexis's enormous bedroom doesn't have any space constraints. That would be awkward, don't you think? I think it would be better than nothing, but I don't say so. In fact, keep it to yourself, okay? I wouldn't want to hurt Haley's feelings. No, of course you wouldn't. I unwind my arm from her grasp. I've got to get to swim practice, I say. Her face falls, but she quickly recovers, twisting her mouth into a fake grin, raising her voice a full octave. Yeah, of course. 9 o'clock tomorrow, we'll pick you up. She takes off in the opposite direction. Part of me still feels guilty about Haley, but another part of me is excited to spend the day with my friends, getting pampered at a luxurious spa. It will be fun, and it's nice not to be the fifth wheel for once. I'm on the diving block, staring into lane 3, running my thumb across the scratchy surface 3 times, waiting for the whistle to blow. When it does, my body responds just like it's supposed to. My knees bend and my arms stretch, and my fingers cut through the water's surface in the seconds before I feel it drench my cheeks. Then the silence. I kick hard underwater and try to lock in my song, but nothing comes. As I pop up and start the fly, my strokes feel sloppy, uneven, and by the time I turn and kick off the wall, I'm at least 4 strokes behind everyone else. I climb out of the pool and get in the back of the line. Jackson Roth looks over his shoulder at me.
Coach is in a mood today, isn't he?
I guess. We're down to a small group of swimmers now that school's started. The numbers will keep dwindling as fall's extracurricular activities begin, homework picks up, and it becomes harder to squeeze in team workouts at the club. I'm looking forward to that. I prefer to come here at night, swimming under the stars with the adults. They keep to themselves. I press my fingertips hard into my temples, ignoring everyone around me, while I breathe and try to focus my energy. When it's my turn, I step onto the blocks again, slide my thumb along the surface 3 times, and dive in, waiting for a song, any song to come. And one finally does, but it's not one I expect. Those notes AJ played the other day start running through my head, and as soon as I surface, I know what song will be taking me back and forth across the pool. I speed up the tempo, and my body follows suit until I'm flying through the lane, pushing hard off the wall, throwing my arms over my head, feeling that adrenaline surge every time I lift my chest out of the water. The tune is clear in my head, but now I want to remember the lyrics, and I can't. Lazy Ray. I think he was singing about the sun going down. There was a line about sunlight dancing on your skin, and another about a crack in the fence or something. What was that line? I'm still trying to piece it together as I step into the shower to rinse off the chlorine. I'm alone in the locker room, so I start humming as I pull on my sweats and pile my hair into a messy bun. On the drive home, I leave the stereo off, because I prefer his song over anything I have on a playlist. And I have to remember all the lyrics. It's driving me nuts. It's easy to stay lost in my thoughts during dinner. Paige got sent to the principal's office today for talking back to a teacher, so she has my parents' undivided attention. My family is arguing over the distinction between clarifying questions and back talk while I drift off to a better place. I'm picturing that room and its walls, covered in torn notebook pages and ripped-up napkins, pieces of brown paper lunch sacks and fast food wrappers, and how all that chaos and disorder gave me such a strange sort of peace. I can visualize the exact spot AJ slapped up those words. But that's all I have. I can't download the song and listen to it on repeat, looking up the lyrics online and deciphering them like I typically would. I have to get back down to that room. I'm starting to recognize this for the obsession that it is, but it doesn't bother me. It's innocent, like solving a puzzle. My mind has certainly come up with more dangerous fixations. Are you okay, Sam? Mom asks. Her voice snaps me back to reality, and when I look up from my plate, Mom, Dad, and Paige are all staring at me. Dad has a huge grin on his face. What?
You were singing,
he says. And humming, Mom adds. I was. Earworm, I say. This song has been stuck in my head all day. It was really pretty, Paige says. Under the table where no one can see me, I scratch my jeans 3 times. Yes, it was. I'm about to pop a sleeping pill when completely different words start forming in my mind. I feel an overwhelming urge to write them down. I haven't thought about the notebooks in years, but they're still on the top shelf of my bookcase, and I remember exactly what Shrink Sue said when she gave them to me. I was to write every day in the notebook that best matched how I was feeling. The yellow notebook was for happy thoughts. The red notebook was for when I was angry and needed to vent. The blue one was for when I was feeling good, peaceful, not happy, not angry, neutral, somewhere in the middle. I open the blue notebook first and see handwriting that belonged to a much younger me. I'd clearly followed Sue's advice for a while, but about a quarter of the way into the book, the entries end. The red book is filled with thoughts written with a heavier hand. My penmanship is different, but I don't know if that's because I was older or angrier. I read a few lines but stop quickly. It's depressing. But not as depressing as seeing that the yellow notebook is completely empty. Tossing the red and yellow ones on the floor, I crawl under the covers with the blue one. Pen in hand, I flip to the first blank page, but nothing's happening. I don't know what to write about. I could write about my OCD, or the number 3, or uncontrollable thought spirals that come out of nowhere, demand my undivided attention, and scare me when they won't stop. Or how I'm terrified about Alexis's birthday tomorrow, and it doesn't seem right to be afraid to spend the day with your best friends. Poets need words. Even when I have the right ones, I can never seem to spit them out. Words only seem to serve me when I'm in the pool. The pool. I put pen to paper and off I go, writing about the one thing that makes me feel healthy and happy and normal. Cutting through the surface, hearing the whoosh and the silence, pushing off that cement wall with both feet, feeling powerful and invincible. Loving how the water feels as it slips over my cheeks. 2 hours later, I'm still going, still writing fast, still turning pages. When I get to the end of the next page, I check the clock and realize 2 things. It's after midnight, and I forgot to take my sleep meds. Normally, that would worry me, but it doesn't tonight. I'm too elated to sleep. I return to writing, filling my blue notebook, until I finally drift off on my own, somewhere around 3 a.m. Let me hear. We're all singing along with the music as we pull into the spa entrance, but then Alexis's mom turns the stereo off, and we all fall silent, looking around, taking everything in. The long driveway is lined with lush green trees and pale pink rose bushes, and as the car winds up a steep hill and past a vineyard, I roll down the window and breathe in the scents of freshly cut grass and sweet-smelling lavender. "Wow," Olivia says from the back seat. "No kidding," Caitlin adds. "I told you," Alexis says. I turn to Mrs. Mazur. "This is incredible, thank you." "You are going to love this," she tells me. Haley would have loved this too. We pull up to a circular driveway with an enormous fountain in the center. It must have a gravitational pull, because I start walking toward it, and then I stand there, staring at the water cascading over the edge, listening to the thick droplets land with soothing plinks into the pond below. I close my eyes and let my mouth turn up at the corners the way it wants to. "Come here, girls!" Mrs. Mazur is standing at the back of the car, and we all gather around her. "I have a surprise." She pops the trunk, reaches inside, and pulls out a bright green terry cloth bag with Alexis's name embroidered in white. "One for you, birthday girl." As she reaches into the trunk again, Alexis unzips the bag and sifts through the contents, pulling out body lotion and cuticle cream and facial scrub. "And one for you," she says, handing Olivia the same personalized bag in red, her favorite color. "Of course, purple for you, Caitlin," she says. "Mine will be blue." She closes the trunk and wraps her arm around my shoulders. "I'm sorry, Samantha. I tried to order another one yesterday, but it was too late." "That's okay." I feel my lower lip start to quiver, so I bite it hard. "But I have something extra special for you. I want you to pick out anything you want from the gift shop, okay? And I mean anything." She squeezes my shoulder and takes off, dramatically gesturing toward the entrance. "Okay, follow me, everyone." Breathe, breathe, breathe. Inside, the spa smells clean, like cucumbers and mint, and I'm relieved to see another fountain in the corner. I stand next to it and scratch the back of my neck 3 times, until a woman at the front desk calls us over, gives each of us a fluffy white robe, and assigns us a locker. I change quickly, text Mom to tell her everything's going well, and join everyone in the waiting area. We're sipping cucumber water and whispering about how incredible this place is when I hear my name. Alexis waves at me. "Have fun!" The esthetician leads me to a room with peaceful, zen-like music and reclines my chair. "I have you booked for our signature anti-aging facial," she says in a soft voice. "All you have to do is relax and close your eyes. Tell me if you need anything." I'm not sure how to tell her I'm 16 and don't need an anti-aging facial, so I stay quiet, even when she starts chattering about the harmful effects of the sun. Eventually, I stop fixating on the mistake and let my thoughts drift back to one of the poems I wrote last night. I repeat it in my mind over and over again until my 90 minutes are up. As we're all dressing in the locker room, Alexis's mom announces that we're late for lunch and we need to hurry. A few minutes later, we're in the car, winding back down the long driveway and heading into town. The five of us troop single file along a narrow brick walkway and up a short staircase to the restaurant. I knew this place was really popular, but this... Mrs. Mazur looks overwhelmed as she scans the packed cafe. While we wait for her to get our table, Olivia reaches into her bag and removes her new lotion and passes it around so we can all try it. Alexis can't stop buzzing about the new convertible she thinks will be waiting in the driveway when we get back to her house. A few minutes later, the hostess tells us to follow her. She stops at a tiny table with three chairs squeezed around it. There are five of us, Alexis's mom says. The reservation is for two tables, ma'am. And the person I spoke with yesterday assured me the tables would be together. The hostess shifts the stack of menus from one arm to the other, and her eyes dart nervously around the room. It's okay, Mrs. Mazur says. If you could add another chair to this table, I'll sit alone at the other one. I'm sorry, ma'am, but I can't do that. Fire code. No one says anything, but after a few uncomfortable seconds, I feel Mrs. Mazur thread her arm through mine. Want to keep me company? Sure. I bite the inside of my lip three times. Alexis doesn't seem to know what to say. We're ordering two desserts, each, she says to the group, and when the hostess steps in front of us, we follow her to the next table. One, breathe. Two, breathe. Three, breathe. The two of us make small talk for the next 20 minutes, while I try not to stare at my friends laughing and chatting and waving sympathetically at me from the other side of the room. When my salad arrives, I awkwardly pick at it. Finally, I excuse myself to go to the restroom and hide behind a potted plant out of view, holding back tears as I text Mom, telling her about my not-so-perfect spa day. She must sense the panic in my words, because after a bunch of texts telling me it's not so bad, she says, come home. Then she follows with back-to-back messages. We'll be out when you get here. I love you. You're in control. Take deep breaths. I'm in control. I take some deep breaths and return to my salad. The car pulls into my driveway and I can't get out fast enough. She never wanted me to come. Alexis tells me she hopes I feel better. Caitlin and Olivia echo her words, yelling out the window as they drive away. We'll miss you tonight, Caitlin says. No, you won't. We love you, Olivia adds. No, you don't. As soon as I close the front door behind me, the tears start falling, and the thoughts flood in faster and faster, tumbling over each other, pushing themselves to the front, fighting for my attention. I shouldn't have gone. The sun is setting, and it's dark and quiet in the entryway. I slide down to the floor and wrap my arms around my knees, letting myself cry, allowing the thoughts to come as fast as they want to. The surrender feels good in a weird way. The knock on the door makes me jump. Just a minute, I yell, dashing into the hall bathroom to check my face. The mascara I carefully applied at the spa is everywhere but my eyelashes, and my whole face is bright red and puffy. I clean up as fast as I can and look through the peephole. Caroline? What are you doing here? I ask as I open the door and immediately regret my words. Caroline's face falls and she takes two steps backward. You invited me over? She says, flustered. To watch a movie, remember? Oh, no. It's Saturday night, isn't it? The lilt in her voice sounds a little forced. She gives her flannel shirt sleeve a tug and checks the time on that beat-up watch of hers. You didn't tell me when to come by, so it took a chance. She narrows her eyes, studying my face. Hey, what's wrong? Are you okay? Now that I think about it, I am okay. The thoughts are actually gone, and as far as I can tell, they're not quietly waiting in the wings, whispering and preparing to pounce again. They're completely gone.
Yeah.
I pull the door open so she has room to step inside, and I voice the only thought in my head. I'm really glad you're here. She obviously knows that I forgot all about our plans, but she doesn't call me on it, so I don't say anything either. To break the tension, I ask her if she wants some water, but she says she's not thirsty. I ask her if she wants some ice cream, but she says she's not hungry. It seems a little too early to start a movie, so I ask her if she wants to come upstairs to hang out in my room and listen to music. She doesn't answer, but I start walking toward the stairs and she follows me. My room's a mess. I scurry around, scooping up piles of clothes and stuffing them into the laundry hamper. I thought people with OCD were supposed to be neat, she says. Popular misconception, I say as I kick all the textbooks strewn across the floor into a haphazard pile. You don't have to clean up for me, you know. You should see my room. It's a disaster. Stuff everywhere. I ignore her and keep picking things up. Caroline walks around my room, looking at the pictures on my walls. She stops in front of the collage I made in eighth grade. The crazy eights is written across the top, in hot pink, bubbly letters, and pictures spanning more than a decade are clustered below. Wow, you've known your friends for a long time, Caroline says as I'm docking my phone. I start my In the Deep playlist. My nerves are still a little rattled. I walk over and join her. She gestures to the poster. Do you want to tell me what happened today? She says, as if she knows my red eyes and puffy face had something to do with my friends. How do you know something happened? I have a knack for reading people, she says casually. Here, look into my eyes and think of a number, not three. I look at her funny, but fix my eyes on hers and think about the number nine. Caroline stares back, and then a huge smile forms across her face. I'm just messing with you. I was only two houses away when your friend's mom pulled into your driveway. I feel like an idiot. Caroline laughs and takes a couple of steps backward until she reaches my bed. She drops back on my comforter and rests her weight on her hands, legs crossed in front of her. I read her t-shirt. Free shrugs. So what happened today? She looks like she genuinely wants to hear the story, and I definitely want to talk about it. If Mom were here, we'd be downstairs on the couch, eating ice cream straight out of the carton while I spilled every detail. I flop down on the opposite side of the bed, mimicking Caroline's pose. Today was Alexis's birthday. Alexis, the little Barbie one, wears high heels like every day? I nod. It's funny to hear how other people see her. Then I fill her in on the details of the spa day I wasn't originally invited to. I tell her about the drive, and the sound of the fountain, and the smell of flowers on the breeze. But when I get to the part about the personalized bags, my chest feels tight. I pull at a loose thread on the pant leg of my jeans. It's dumb, right? I shouldn't be upset. It was last minute. I let my words hang in the air as I check Caroline's reaction. She doesn't say anything, but her face scrunches up, and I can tell she doesn't think I'm dumb at all. Her mom obviously felt bad, I continue. She said I could pick anything I wanted from the gift shop. I hope you picked something ridiculously expensive. I shake my head. After our appointments were finished, we were running late and she rushed us off to lunch. Caroline bites her lip. But hey, on the bright side, look at my skin. I lean in a little closer. Don't I look 10 years younger? She leans in too. You're asking me if you look like you're 6? I laugh and Caroline joins in. I hope lunch was better. Worse. She stops laughing. How is that possible? When her mom called the restaurant to change the reservation from 4 people to 5, they told her we had to be at separate tables. I guess she assumed they'd push them together or something. No. Yep, it was a French restaurant with these tiny cafe tables. Wait, so you sat with your friend's mom while everyone else sat together at another table? I'm glad I didn't have to say it out loud. I have a feeling it still wouldn't be funny. I cross my arms. I faked a headache to come home early, but now I feel a real one coming on with the retelling. I'm overreacting, right? As I wait for her response, I study her eyes. They're narrow and hooded, but I'm no longer trying to figure out how to apply eyeshadow to open them up. They're pretty the way they are. Her hair doesn't seem so stringy either, and I'm not dying to cover up her blemishes. I'm just happy she's here. You're not overreacting, she says. Are you sure? Because you can tell me if I am. I have a tendency to overthink things, especially when it comes to my friends and, I don't know, I take things too personally. I mean, it isn't always them. Sometimes it's me. I just don't always know when it's them and when it's me, you know? I'm not sure if that made sense, but Caroline's looking at me like she understood it perfectly. It's like I can read her mind right now. She doesn't like that my friends hurt my feelings, intentionally or not. Whether it's them or me, she doesn't understand why I'd choose to hang around with people I'm constantly questioning. And she's sad for me, because my closest friends don't feel all that close anymore. Not like they did when we were those kids on that poster hanging on my wall. I picture the people I saw in Poet's Corner that day. You don't ever wonder what your friends think about you, do you? Caroline doesn't answer, but she doesn't have to. I can tell I'm right by the look on her face. You're lucky, I say. I stare down at my feet, thinking about how I spent last night tucked down in my bed with a flashlight, writing horrible poetry into the early morning hours, waking up feeling drained but euphoric at the same time. I've been thinking about those poems all day. I couldn't wait to get home to write again. When I look up, I find Caroline staring at me. What? I ask. A cautious smile spreads across her lips. Let me hear one. I look at her like I have no idea what she's talking about, but I'm pretty sure I do. One what? I can hear the anxiety in my own voice. A poem. How does she know I've been writing poetry? Read me something from the blue notebook. My head snaps up and my jaw drops. How does she know about the colors? She points over at my nightstand, and I twist in place, my eyes following the invisible line that leads from her fingertip to the stack of three notebooks, red, yellow, and blue, piled underneath the lamp. You're writing, aren't you? She asks. I don't answer her directly, but I don't have to. She can probably tell she's right by the panicked look on my face. I can't read my poetry to her. I can't read it to anyone. Shrink Sue told me I didn't have to share anything I wrote in those books. I wouldn't have written it if I thought otherwise. Is it really dark? She continues. It's okay if it is. My stuff can get pretty dark, too. No, it's not dark. It's stupid. My stuff can get pretty stupid, too. I won't make fun of you, I promise. I can't. Read me your favorite. Don't think about it. Just go. Read. I laugh. You're telling me to not think. All I do is think. All the time. I think so much I'm on medication and I see a shrink every Wednesday. I can't not think, Caroline. Sam. What? Go. I have the perfect one in mind. It's short. I can read it without throwing up. Besides, I kind of like it. And I don't even need my blue notebook, because these words have been stuck in my head all day, during my ridiculous facial, and in the car after we left the spa, and during lunch. They joined the mantras. They kept the destructive thoughts from invading. I sit up again. My hands are shaking, so I tuck them under my legs, as I take a deep breath, close my eyes, and say, it's called The Drop. Standing on the platform, sun sinking into my skin. This water will cover me like a blanket, and I'll be safe again. She doesn't laugh, but the room is completely silent. I open my eyes and look at her, waiting for a reaction. She hated it. We have to get you back downstairs, Caroline finally says, and I can hear the sincerity in her voice, can see it in her face. She liked it. I stare at her, wondering if she's too good to be true. Where did she come from? Why is she being so nice to me? That'll never happen, I tell her plainly. That Keymaster guy hates me. He won't even look at me. I picture him on that stool, and his song starts playing in my head. I think about the words and where they live on that wall. If I could get back downstairs, I could find his lyrics. I'll commit them to memory next time. That's just AJ, she says, giving a dismissive shake of her head. And he doesn't hate you. But you hurt him, and he doesn't know how to handle that. What? My thoughts stop cold. Hurt him? What are you talking about? She looks right at me, but doesn't say a word. Caroline, how did I hurt him? I don't even know him. Yes, you do. I remember how he stood in front of me, blocking my way into Poet's Corner the other day. He looked familiar, but I've never known anyone named AJ, and he's cute enough, especially with that dimple and that adorable guitar-playing thing of his, that I would have remembered him if we'd met before. Are you going to tell me? She shakes her head. You'll figure it out. I stare at her in disbelief. I don't want to figure it out, Caroline. I want you to tell me. That might have sounded bitchy. I didn't mean it to, but I can't believe she's holding out on me. She checks her watch. I have to go. She hops off the bed and starts walking toward the door. What about the movie? Maybe another time, she says as she reaches for the doorknob. My mind is leaping around from thought to thought, like it can't settle on one. I hurt him, and Caroline's leaving, but she likes my poem. I like talking to her. I don't want her to leave. It's okay, I say. You don't have to tell me. Please, stay. It's killing me not to know what I did, but there are plenty of other things I want to talk to her about. I want to ask her about all the poets. I want to know about that room and how it got there and how it works. And I want her to read me some of her poems. I want to be her friend. She turns around and looks at me. I hurry over to my nightstand, grab the blue notebook from the pile, and hold it up in the air. I want to get back to Poet's Corner, but I don't know how to. Will you help me? We fixed him. Mom's buttering toast for Paige, drinking her coffee, and replying to a message on her cell phone when she says, Do you want to talk about what happened yesterday? Nah, I'm good. I down my orange juice. I talked to my friend Caroline last night. Mom's typing again. Who's Caroline? She asks without looking up. Just someone I met at school. She's nice. She came over after I got home from the spa. Now I have her attention. Really? Her eyes grow wide. I try to act nonchalant about the whole thing, like this happens all the time. But then I picture Caroline sitting on the floor in my room, helping me with my poetry, and I feel a little bit giddy. Yeah, I would have introduced you, but she had to leave before you guys got home. Have you told Sue about her? Yep. I grab the toast with one hand and punch Paige lightly on the arm with the other. I'm going to the pool. The next day, Olivia and I are walking to trigonometry when I see AJ heading right for us. I almost didn't notice him. I probably wouldn't have if the dark ski hat hadn't caught my eye, because he's looking down at the ground and keeping pace with everyone else. He walks right by me. Caroline's words have haunted me since Saturday night. He doesn't hate you, but you hurt him. I can't figure out what I did, and somewhere around 2:30 this morning, I decided I was going to find out the first chance I got. I left my trig book in my locker, I say to Olivia. I'll meet you at class. She waves me off, and I do a 180 and start following the ski cap heading in the opposite direction. AJ turns the corner and stops at a locker. Keeping my distance, I watch as he rests his backpack on one knee and swaps out his books. When he sees me, he tilts his chin in my direction. Hey. No smile, no wave, just the chin tilt. He swings his locker door closed. Hi. I gesture toward the main corridor. I saw you in the hall, but I guess you didn't see me. He shakes his head. I wanted to say hello. I dig my fingernails into the back of my neck. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. And, you know, say thank you for letting me join you guys last week. AJ checks the area around us and steps in closer. He's a full head taller than me, and when he tucks his chin to his chest and stares down at me, I feel guilty, even though I haven't done anything wrong. His eyebrows lift accusingly.
You haven't told anyone, have you?
Of course not. I wouldn't do that. He's still close. He's still staring at me like he's trying to decide if I'm telling the truth. I square my shoulders and straighten my spine. I told you I wouldn't, and I haven't.
Good,
he says. Another long pause.
Don't.
I won't. He steps out of my personal space, and I have a chance to look at him. Really look at him. His dark blonde hair is poking out from under the cap, and his eyes are this interesting brownish green that's almost the same color as the t-shirt he's wearing. He's not clean-cut like most of my guy friends. He's scruffier, but in a sexy way. I try to read the expression on his face, but I can't. And it bothers me, because there's something about the way he's looking at me right now that makes me feel sorry for him. He looks sweet, maybe even shy, and nothing like the confident guy I watched perform on that stage last week. The questions are spinning in my head, and I want to spit them out and get it over with. How do I know you? How did I hurt you? How do I tell you I'm sorry if I have no idea what I did? But I push the words down, searching for new, safer ones. I really loved your song. It's kind of been stuck in my head. He takes another step back.
Thanks,
he says. I've been trying to remember all the lyrics, but... Invite me back, please. I look around again to be sure there's no one within earshot. That day downstairs, I guess it kind of inspired me. My poems aren't very good or anything. I pause for a moment, waiting for him to say something, but he doesn't, so I keep blabbering. I barely slept last weekend. Now he looks at me sideways, like he's trying to figure out why this is his problem. I haven't been... I stop short, realizing I was about to admit that I haven't been taking the prescription sleep meds I've popped every night for the last 5 years. I keep forgetting. Or maybe I don't forget. Maybe I make a choice to keep writing, despite how exhausted I'll be the next day. I haven't been sleeping. Once I start writing, I kind of need to keep going. I let a nervous laugh escape. The corners of his mouth turn up slightly. Not much, but enough to expose that dimple and catch me off guard.
You're writing?
I nod.
You?
AJ crosses his arms like he doesn't believe me, but at least now I can read the look on his face. He's surprised, maybe even intrigued.
You're writing poetry, and not because you have to for a class?
I shrug. I think he expects me to be offended, but I'm not. I get it. The whole poetry thing shocks me, too. Of course it's total crap, I say, hoping more self-criticism will elicit some kind of reaction, like an invitation to come downstairs and say those words on stage so they can pelt me with paper and later glue sticks. AJ uncrosses his arms and transfers his backpack from one shoulder to the other.
I bet your poems are better than you think they are.
It's not true, but it's a nice thing to say. And he looks like he means it. I start to reply, but then I look past him over his right shoulder and see Caitlin walking in our direction, taking measured steps, hanging back like she's timing her arrival so she doesn't interrupt the two of us. Invite me back. I want to hear more poetry, more of your songs.
I've got to get to class,
he says.
I'll see you later, okay?
And with that, he takes off, leaving Caitlin the opening she was waiting for. She lengthens her stride, and as soon as she's close enough, she grabs me by the arm with both hands. Holy shit! Was that Andrew Olsen? She asks. Who? She lets go of me so she can point at him, and together we watch AJ open a classroom door and disappear from sight.
That was him. God, we were so brutal to that kid, weren't we?
She shakes her head as I turn his name over in my mind. Andrew Olson. Andrew Olson. Who? I ask again, and she slaps my arm with the back of her hand.
Andrew Olson, remember? Fourth grade, Mrs. Collins's class?
Caitlin must be able to tell by the look on my face that I'm not connecting the dots, because she breaks into this huge grin. She shakes her hips and sings,
Andrew,
to the tune of the Chia Pet jingle, and then she starts cracking up.
How can you not remember Andrew? That kid stuttered so badly he couldn't even say his name. We used to follow him around singing that song. You have to remember this.
Oh, God, I do. It's all starting to come back to me, and when she sings that horrible song again, I can see Caitlin and me in our skirts and ponytails, trailing behind him on the playground while he covered his ears, tears streaming down his face, trying to run away from us. We never let him get far.
Andrew?
That's all I can get out. I want to throw up.
Andrew, that's what Caroline meant. Remember? We even made him cry on that field trip to the museum. His mom had to come all the way into the city to pick him up.
I don't want to remember, but I do. I remember everything. How it all started, how it finally ended. Caitlin singled him out early on. Eventually, I joined in. We teased him at every recess, during lunch, after school, when he was waiting for the bus. We looked for him, looked forward to finding him. I can even picture his face when he saw us coming, and I remember how it made me feel guilty, but not guilty enough to stop, because it also made me feel powerful in a weird way. And there was always a look of approval on Caitlin's face. When school started the following year, we found out he'd transferred, and Caitlin and I were actually disappointed, as if our favorite toy had been permanently taken away from us. I never thought I'd see him again. I'm sure he hoped he'd never see Caitlin and me again, but I assume he didn't have a choice, since this is the only public high school in the area. Caroline was wrong. He hates me. Caitlin stops talking, but I guess the horrified look on my face doesn't register with her, because she's still lit up, as if this whole thing is hilarious.
So why were you talking to him?
She pops her hip and plays with her necklace while she waits for me to answer. It takes me a second to pull it together. When I finally do speak, my voice is shaking, and the words come out in fragmented whispers.
We have a class together.
Does Poet's Corner count as a class? Probably not.
He was in my PE class last year, she says, but we didn't have to talk much, so I never got to hear him. Does he still stutter?
I picture the way he stepped on stage and perched himself on that stool, how he threw his guitar over his shoulder and stated that his song sucked, beaming as he gestured toward his chest, confidently inviting his friends to throw things at him. He sang, and his words were beautiful and clear, not broken in any way. Nothing about him was broken. No, he doesn't. He's long gone, but Caitlin points in his direction.
See, we fixed him, she says proudly.
My cheeks feel hot, and when she elbows me laughing, my hands ball into fists by my side.
You know what they say, that which does not kill us makes us stronger.
I'm unable to speak or breathe or move. I can't believe she just said that, and I know I should defend him, but I'm frozen in place, totally stunned, saying nothing as usual.
Besides, she continues, that was a million years ago. We were little kids. I bet he doesn't even remember us.
I feel a huge, uncomfortable lump in my throat. How could I do that to him? To anyone? He remembers, I say under my breath as I walk away. Caroline's at her locker after last bell, and I stall, waiting for everyone to clear out. When the coast is finally clear, I race over to her. I know what I did to AJ. My stomach turns over as I say it. No wonder he doesn't want me downstairs. Caroline, what do I do?
You can start by apologizing, she says.
He'll never forgive me. How could he? He must think I'm a horrible person.